Hello and welcome to Talking New Retina, the official podcast of the European Society of Retina Specialists. I'm Jonathan McRae. In this podcast, we bring you expert discussions and interviews with leaders from the world of retina and beyond. We also keep you up to date with the latest news from the society. In this episode, we'll explore how to treat a patient with uveitis in 2024. But before we get to that, if you're listening to this podcast fresh off the press, you've not long until the abstract deadline. It is 18th of March for free papers, posters, and the video competition. A little bit more time is afforded to you if you would like to enter the mentorship program, which I highly recommend. Again, you can listen back to a podcast on what's involved in our podcast feed. The mentorship program applications are open until the 11th of April, but there is a bit of preparation to be done, so don't leave it until the 10th, like I might. One more thing to mention, we would love to hear your suggestions for topics on the podcast. Tell us what you liked and even what you didn't like at podcast@uretina.org. All right, on to our clinical discussion. And in this episode, we'll be looking at what are the key decisions to make when treating a patient with uveitis in 2024. We are joined by an expert panel. Elisabeth Mezzarocci is Professor of Ophthalmology and Chief of the Uveitis Service at San Raffaele University in Milan. Zohar Habot-Wilner is Professor of Ophthalmology and Head of Uveitis Service in Tel Aviv Medical Center and Tel Aviv University. And their contributions are chaired by Professor of Ophthalmology and Visual Sciences at Sorbonne University and CEO of the Medical Council of Sorbonne Hospitals, Bahram Bodagi. Bahram, great to have you back on the podcast. Over to you.
Good evening to you, Retina, and happy to be with you for this podcast dedicated to the investigation of your patients with uveitis. We want to make it very informative, and we want to adapt it to the retina specialist. So with this, I will start immediately with one question for Zohar. Zohar, what are the key elements of your clinical examination, especially for the retina specialist, before deciding on the workup you will propose?
So thank you very much, Barham, for this very important question. So actually, uveitis could be caused by infectious pathogens or non-infectious etiologies, or it may be even a sign of a masquerade syndrome. So I think that the most important thing is to conduct a thorough medical history and review of systems in order to understand the story behind the disease. If there is also a systemic disease and the disease course, it is important to ask about history of systemic disease and if there are any diseases among other family members, if there is a known ocular disease, if the patient underwent any ocular surgery or trauma. We should ask about the use of medications and vaccinations, contact with animals, and traveling. Infectious uveitis should also be considered, and we should rule it out in patients if they have systemic immunocompromised status, for example, patients with HIV or patients under immunosuppressive treatments. So I think it is important to understand if the disease involves also both eyes or is it a unilateral disease. Regarding the disease course, we should ask about disease onset, disease duration, to understand if it is an acute disease with limited duration, a recurrent or chronic disease. It is very crucial to conduct a thorough eye examination in addition to the use of multimodal imaging tests to understand which part of the eye is involved in the disease and to classify the uveitis type. And another important point is to classify the uveitis as granulomatous or non-granulomatous disease. And I think that a precise classification of uveitis leads to an accurate differential diagnosis, and it helps to plan a good diagnostic workup.
Thank you, Zohar. I think these are really the key elements we have to consider. Do you have an example of something when you look at the patient, you look at the eye, you say, okay, this is probably this disease, and I will orient my investigations towards this disease? And how often you have, let's say, good surprises with your investigations? Let's take it in another way. I think personally that if you know well each of our diseases, then you can very easily orient your workup. Do you agree with this? Because I think that it's important for our colleagues not to have a checklist, you know, with the 30 blood tests and a lot of scans and MRI and all this, because I think that the clinical examination is really very important. Do you agree with this?
Exactly. I think that we should need to understand what we see. We need to understand the type of uveitis. And if we understand the type of uveitis and we know the diseases that may cause specific types, then we have everything. And I think that the story of the patient in many, many aspects tell us everything about the disease.
Absolutely. So this is very important. I don't want to take, you know, the chapter in the textbook when you have all the exams one after the other and try to take them all to the patient. And at the end of the day, the patient is not happy and we are not happy because most of them are non-contributive. Thank you. Elisabetta, there is one question. Some people think that they have to wait until the second or the third episode of uveitis before proposing a workup. And sometimes they say, okay, this is not very important because we have just retried this, very mild. So we can give them some drops of local corticosteroids and wait and see what happens. And maybe do the examinations and the work, propose the workup later on. What do you think? Do you think that we should do it immediately when we see a patient with uveitis, or we can wait in some cases?
Hi, Bahram, and thank you for the invitation to the podcast. So regarding the your question, I think it's very important to ask for investigation and proper investigation from the beginning, so from the first episode of uveitis. If this is a anterior uveitis or posterior uveitis, but you need to search for the cause of your uveitis because, as Zohar told us, you need to fit the diagnosis into three boxes. If this is an autoimmune disease, it's an infectious disease, or if this is a masquerade syndrome. And I think it's completely wrong to start the topical corticosteroids or systemic corticosteroids without a proper diagnosis and delay the search for systemic investigations and laboratory workup because you really give your patient to a high risk of visual loss. Because, for example, if you treat an infectious disease with systemic corticosteroids, the patient may go blind. And this is especially true for retinitis. So many times we see patients with, for example, infectious retinitis misdiagnosed as a non-infectious retinitis that have been given systemic or even intraocular corticosteroids. So I think it's very important, even from the first episode of uveitis, to search for the proper cause of uveitis.
Okay, great, Elisabetta. So now that we heard Zohar and you, we know that when a patient comes with an episode of uveitis, either the first or the second or the third, we need first to really have a review of system, have ask questions about the medical history, all the past medical history, and not only for the eyes, and look carefully to the eyes in order to see where the inflammation is, have the anatomic classification, if it's anterior, intermediate, posterior, panuveitis, if it's granulomatous or not, and orientate then our investigation. And we know that by listening to you that it's very important not to wait, but propose a workup immediately when we see a patient with uveitis. Do you agree that, however, we can propose a first-line investigation to all our patients when they arrive, and then we can propose more invasive tests if we don't find initially our etiology? Do you agree with this, or you propose immediately all the battery of tests?
No, I agree that the investigation should be driven by the clinical spectrum and the combination of systemic symptoms and systemic signs and especially imaging, because according to the imaging results, you can, for example, find a retinal vasculitis or a choroiditis. So then you can drive the investigation from first line and second line. For example, second line may be, for example, a chest CT scan or brain MRI to rule out sarcoidosis or masquerade CNS lymphoma. But yeah, I agree that you can start with the first line, and then if you don't find the cause, you can go for the second line investigation and even third line type of diagnostic techniques.
Thank you, Elisabetta. Zohar, back to you. Now let's take the non-infectious cases, as they are very common, of course, more than in the infectious. So let's take the non-infectious. If you think that you are facing a non-infectious case, which blood tests do you think are important, especially HLA typing, for example, or other tests that you see that we cannot miss? Can you just summarize a little bit how you will do that?
Okay, so overall, I think that the HLA typing has actually limited usefulness as a diagnostic test in patients with uveitis. Having said that, there are two conditions that I do recommend on this test. So the first is patients with recurrent anterior uveitis, in which HLA B27 testing may be of value in identifying a seronegative spondyloarthropathy, because it is commonly positive in these diseases. And this includes ankylosing spondylitis, psoriatic arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease associated arthritis, reactive arthritis, and undifferentiating spondyloarthropathy. The second condition is patients suspected with birdshot chorioretinopathy, in which HLA A29 is positive in over 90% of the patients, and it has a very important role in disease diagnosis. Regarding the HLA B51 and B5, it may be considered in patients suspected with Behçet disease, but it is not part of the criteria of disease diagnosis, as it is positive in approximately half of the patients. So when I consider to use the HLA typing tests, I need to carefully target it to very specific situations in which I think my patients may have.
Okay, I think this is very clear. Do you have any other test, Zohar, which you are using, you are asking for in a routine manner? For example, the ACE or lysozyme or other tests that for non-infectious uveitis, especially sarcoid, do you rely on that?
So for all of my patients, of course, complete blood counting and chemistry and ECR, ESR and the CRP, of course, because we need to understand the basic of our patients, importantly, before giving them any treatments. Regarding sarcoidosis, chest X-ray, of course, ACE, blood calcium is also very important. In cases in which I think that the patient may have sarcoidosis, sometimes chest X-ray is not enough. So then I refer them to do the chest CT, which I found also very important for this diagnosis. Syphilis is must, serology for syphilis in all of my patients, of course. And the Mantoux test, important before giving them anti-TNF treatments. And
we are with the non-infectious. So this is really for the non-infectious.
For the non-infectious patient in which I think they may need an anti-TNF treatment, we do Mantoux test, of course, sometimes also QuantiFERON.
That's an important point, because even if it's not infectious, you can have a tuberculosis. So this is very important. Thank you very much, Zohar. Back to Elisabetta now. Let's take now the other part, which are the infectious uveitis cases, Elisabetta. How do you manage those cases? Do you agree that these are more emergency cases, even though we have complications with the non-infectious ones, that may be an emergency? But if you have a retinal vasculitis with retinal necrosis, then it's very urgent. So how do you investigate those cases?
Yeah, well, first of all, you have to think about the epidemiology of the infectious disease, because we have so many infections that can give us uveitis, and every type of infectious has its own typical clinical pattern. So in industrialized countries, for example, you have to remember that the most common infectious are for sure herpetic disease, like anterior herpetic uveitis and viral retinitis, and also toxoplasmosis. So you have to recognize particular type of retinitis, if this is an acute retinal necrosis caused by HSV and VZV, or if this is a CMV retinitis, like it's a more hemorrhagic retinitis, or if this is a toxocoral retinitis. But for each type of infectious, of course, you have to make the diagnosis first by the clinical picture of the uveitis, and then ask for tailor-made investigation and serology, and eventually anterior chamber tap or vitrectomy also for making a diagnosis of viral and toxocoral retinitis. And then you have also to think about the less common form of infectious uveitis, but you have to rely on the clinical picture. And I think that, like Zohar told us, syphilis and TB are the most common type of infectious uveitis to rule out, not only in emerging countries, but also in industrialized countries, because they are re-emerging even in our industrialized country. And you have to remember that syphilis may present as a masquerader. It can present with any type of uveitis. And TB, as we already told, it's very important to rule out in terms of specific treatment, and also when you are starting an immunosuppressive therapy.
Great. So, Elisabetta, these are very important questions, and retina colleagues ask us regularly, for example, if the serology for herpes or toxo has something important, if it's positive. Of course, I think we all agree that we can say that if it's positive, we cannot say that what is in the eye is also related to the same disease. But of course, if it's negative, and if it has been repeated, then if this toxo serology is negative, it cannot be a toxoplasma. So you can exclude these infections. If not, if you want really to confirm, and if the clinical presentation is not very informative, then you need to go and to perform anterior chamber tap or a vitrectomy. So I think that with this, and maybe we will end our podcast with more invasive technologies. But now going back to bacterial infections and syphilis, of course, this is really, it should be in all the workups. We need to include syphilis testing. That's really important. But regarding TB, are you asking for MANTU in your patients still now, or you just go with cantiferon and maybe with the CT scan, chest CT scan? What is your strategy for TB in your patients?
Well, I'm not going anymore for a PPD test, but I'm going straight to the quantiferon test. And actually, I ask the quantiferon test in all my uveitis patients, either if they have anterior uveitis or posterior uveitis. Then I will go ahead with, for example, chest CT scan. If I want to rule out extraocular TB, especially in cases where you have the typical and suggestive signs of ocular tuberculosis, like choroiditis, retinal vasculitis, or, for example, if the patient is coming from an endemic country of TB. But, of course, I will not ask a chest CT scan in all my patients with uveitis, only if I have a precise suspect of ocular tuberculosis to rule out pulmonary tuberculosis.
I think this is really very, very important to say and to understand. For other bacterial infections, let's say that serology may be informative in 50-60% of cases. For example, for cat scratch disease, leptospirosis. And this is what we brings us to the first question. And Zohar told us very nicely that we need to ask questions to our patients. We need to define what are the risk factors. And if we have these risk factors, then we can ask for Bartonella serology, leptospirosis, and other infections. Rickettsia, for example, of course, are also important. Thank you very much. Zohar, now that we have seen the blood test in the non-infectious and infectious, what about the imaging? You started to a little bit elaborate on imaging, chest CT scan, for example, or brain MRI. How do you propose this test? By the way, QuantiFERON is a little bit expensive. So we need to say that if you don't have a coverage, then it may go up to 100 euros. So it's important. Maybe in some places, Mantoux, of course, still remains important. Zohar, regarding imaging, not ocular imaging, but let's say general imaging.
So regarding general imaging, I would ask my patients to have head MRI if I think that there is a chance for MS, for example. But this should be, you know, part of the medical history and part of the neurological exam, okay? So it's not must in all of the patients. It should be done in patients, for example, with intermediate uveitis in which there is a suspicious for MS. This is regarding head MRI. Regarding chest CT, also if we suspect on sarcoidosis, and we are not sure if it's definitively the disease by chest X-ray.
There is one question, Zohar. Do you prefer chest X-ray or CT scan? Chest CT scan, because many people are now asking directly for chest CT scan.
Yeah, I think the chest CT scan is much better and more sensitive than chest X-ray. Having said that, I think it's more expensive. So it depends on your opportunities.
Yeah, no, I think you are absolutely right. As I say always, if you do a chest X-ray, you need a radiologist to look at it and to really know how to diagnose something on the chest X-ray. The chest CT scan is much easier for a diagnosis because almost everyone can every radiologist can make the diagnosis. Thank you, Zohar. Elisabetta, I finish with one question. And, you know, if we have a complicated situation, when we suspect an infection or when we suspect a malignancy, a lymphoma, then we need to do invasive investigations. So what is your management of those cases? How do you, let's say, for example, let's take two examples. The first one, you have a suspicion of intraocular lymphoma. And the second one, you have a suspicion of retinal necrosis, viral retinal necrosis.
Okay, so when I have the suspicion of vitreoretinal lymphoma, which is a subtype of CNS lymphoma, I start with an ACTAP looking for the MYD88 mutation and for the search of interleukin-10 and interleukin-10 and 6 ratio to see if the patient has abnormalities in the aqueous humor. And then I, of course, proceed with the diagnostic vitrectomy to remove the undiluted vitreous and to search for malignant cells into the vitreous and to make a cytological diagnosis of vitreoretinal lymphoma. The second type of investigation in patients, for example, with retinitis or some sort of chororetinitis that you don't understand if they are viral and which kind of virus is present, I do, first of all, ACTAP for PCR analysis and search for DNA PCR or for P-simplex, varicella zoster, and CMV, because sometimes it's very important to understand if it's a HSV, VZV, or a CMV cause for the retinitis, because the antiviral treatment may change. So acyclovir versus ganciclovir. And then, for example, there are other occasions in which you need to do, for example, diagnostic vitrectomy. And this is the case of, for example, endogenous endophthalmitis or post-upper endophthalmitis, where you have to do the vitrectomy and search for, of course, PCR, but also the vitreous culture to search for fungi and bacteria. So those are the main clinical situation when you have to investigate the patient.
Thank you, Elisabetta. It's very clear. I think that as we are, this podcast is dedicated to our retina colleagues, it's very important to remind them that if you have a suspicion of lymphoma, if you go for a vitrectomy, you have to make sure that you have an appropriate laboratory available next to you in order to send immediately the specimen to the lab. Because if not, you will have your cells will die and you will not be able to diagnose the disease. So this is very important because, of course, all our colleagues know how to do a vitrectomy, but it's not the vitrectomy which is a problem. It's the analysis of the vitreous. So that's really something important. Thank you very much. I think that we are at the end of our podcast. We can summarize maybe by a few key take-home messages by saying that if you have a patient with uveitis, you need a complete clinical examination before going for a workup. Then you will propose a workup in all your patients, even if it's the first episode, even though at the beginning you will start with a few exams and then you will complete. Then if you need to go for a non-infectious uveitis, and Zohar beautifully told us about the HLA taping, which one you need to use, and also some of the blood tests. If you want to exclude an infection, then you need to, again, to be very close to your clinical examination and ask for blood tests, and especially syphilis. It's very important to not to forget. And then imaging, of course, the CT, the chest CT scan or the chest X-ray, together with the MRI when you think that you may have an MS. And also here, Zohar, when you start an anti-TNF, you want to know if it's an MS or not. So it may be important because you don't want to put a patient with MS on anti-TNF. And at the end, when you really don't know how to go further, you need to be invasive and ask for an anterior chamber tap or a vitrectomy in order to confirm an infection or a lymphoma. With this, I think that we are on time, Jonathan. So thank you very much. Thanks to you, Redna, for this podcast dedicated to uveitis. And back to you.
Well, thank you so much to our panel for a fascinating discussion. I have to say, as a layperson, I had no idea that uveitis could be caused by an infection of herpes or TB or HIV and syphilis. Right. If you have any questions on that podcast or you would like to make a comment, you can do so. Email podcast@uretina.org. And once again, thanks to Elisabetta, Zohar and Bahram for their contributions. That's it from us. We'll be back in a couple of weeks on the podcast. I'm Jonathan McRae. We'll see you next time on Talking Uretina.